Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to BWI Live. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. Nate Bauer, senior editor for Blue White Illustrated, is with me. We're talking about Penn State football. It's spring break, but there's plenty of things to get to. And one of my goals here on this channel is when we're here, Nate, to be with people, to be interactive, to be live, and to talk to the people. So that's why I'm completely unprepared today, Nate. I have produced a new segment for the show, which is coming up in just a little bit. I'm going to keep it under wraps for now, but I'll explain it before we get to it. But it is a further reaching out into our YouTube community. That's coming up in just a little bit. But first off, Nate, how you doing today?
I'm great. I'm a little nervous now, but you know, you would never lead me astray, right? I mean, you would never
honestly
put me in the
No. So before we get to whatever happens today, I just want everyone to know this is completely on me. Nate doesn't even know what we're doing. I'm keeping this a secret from him. I haven't told anybody really about this just yet. So what's coming up, I hope it's worth the buildup here. And we're going to play it in about 10 minutes. So let people get in, filter in here on a Tuesday of spring break. Tell your friends, the BWI Live show. We also got the mailbag today. So we're talking to you out in the crowd today about Penn State football and a bunch of other things. So I'm excited for that today, Nate.
When you say play it, is the game?
It is a.
Can I win?
No. It's not a play in sense of I have a video I want to play for everybody.
Gotcha.
It is. It's something I've produced based on the hard work of the people that watch this channel. So I don't want, I'm just teasing the hell out of it at this point. But like I'm excited for this for a couple of reasons, but let's get to some of the things that have happened. Penn State is on spring break.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking. We talked to Drew Aller before he was went back home for spring break yesterday. And if you haven't checked that out, it's on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel, exclusive interview here that we put up last night, and figure we can just talk about it. You know, this is something where the starting quarterback for the Nittany Lions spoke, and we should have a conversation about it, Nate.
Yeah, for sure. I was among the people who watched it, and I was very intrigued. You know, it's always, you mentioned spring break. It is interesting in today's modern era of NIL to see, and deservedly so in a lot of cases, the locales, right? You check the Instagram, you see some of the destinations of Penn State football players, among other college football players, right? But they actually get a spring break opportunity to go somewhere warm and enjoy themselves for a couple of days after what is always such a grueling, winter workout session, and obviously with spring practice up next. But Drew, as you mentioned last night, acknowledging that he was going home to Ohio, right?
For spring break.
So a little less glamorous for Drew, but still, I thought a fruitful conversation in terms of some of the things that they're working on now, which I'm hoping that you can illuminate a little bit for me and us. Talking about the standard operating procedure, go into that for us if you could. Like, what do you feel like that meant when he was talking about nailing down his rules for getting to the line of scrimmage?
Yeah. So just generally, what are you trying to accomplish pre and post snap is what it sounded like to me. And I don't know exactly what these things are, but it, you know, simplifying what he has to read on every single play, allowing him to process the information quickly and get the ball out of his hand. So some of the things I've been researching from Andy Kolonicki and some of the things he likes to do is same as teaching. And a lot of these things I think also flow into RPOs specifically, where he's making quick decisions with the football in his hand, whether to hand it off to the running back or to pull and throw based on either a safety or a linebacker. So he's got to know pre-snap, what's the coverage? Where are these guys located on the field? Read those keys, but not have to read, for example, maybe not have to read both safeties and identify what the coverage is 100% pre and post snap, but understand where the safeties are, where they're aligned, where they might fill based on the underneath coverages and things like that. So understanding the front, IDing things and streamlining what he has to know on every single play, I think is the main thing. He mentioned the 3 to 5 things at the line of scrimmage. So it's not a laundry list of things. It's okay, we're going to simplify this. So I need to know these things when I go to snap the football.
What did you make of his conversation about demanding defensive communication, right? That Coach Kotelnicki's offense does that a little bit more. And I guess what did that mean to you in context of Mike Yurcich, right? And what Penn State was doing last season.
So the way it sounds to me, if I can make this make sense, is what they were doing last year was complicated for them, but simple necessarily, I think, from a coverage perspective or from a defensive perspective, where they used motion, they used RPOs, but they didn't make the defense communicate because of complex things the offense was doing. So on the flip side, Andy Kotelnicki's offense, you know, the whole blizzard analogy of it's vanilla plays. The plays are pretty consistent, but what we're going to do is formations, shifts, motion, unbalanced, stress the defense in a bunch of different ways with offensive, I don't want to say tricks, but different ways that you can make the defense communicate. So for example, if you do a heavy shift pre-snap where you're moving more than one player, that's not motion. That's okay. The tight ends line up on the right side, and suddenly we have one that goes into the slot and the other one flips to the other side. Now you've changed the formation. You've changed the gap accountability for the defensive line and the linebackers. Does a safety have to come down? They have to communicate all these adjustments from the offense pre-snap. So if the offense can get into these formations, they can quickly identify what the defense is. You can find guys making more mistakes because you're forcing them to think. And that's where this offense from the motion perspective, so you can have a shift, then a motion, and it can be, you know, whatever the play actually is. And that can force the defense to react quickly before the snap. And some guys aren't going to be on the same page. You're going to force teams into quicker communication that they may make mistakes on.
It kind of sounded like he was hinting at, if not outright saying, however, that what Kotelnicki wants to do is more simplistic, right? A couple of buzzwords for me were eliminating variables, right? Clear a lot of things up, guys not being indecisive, right? Go out and go 100% without the ball. Is that saying what he's saying about this offense, but also saying something, right? Without saying it necessarily about what they were doing last year.
So this is kind of where I think my understanding of the situation of never being a quarterback or playing organized football on offense outside of my senior year in high school. Like, I don't know what their offense was doing from like an option route perspective. So in certain offenses, the receiver and the quarterback have to be on the same page because you can make an adjustment post snap saying, okay, if we get X coverage, you run this route. If we get Y coverage, adjust your route and run it this way. So it's like, if you have cover three, cut off your route and they're playing off technique. If they have cover three off, you run 12 yards and turn around. Well, if you read that differently as the receiver, maybe suddenly you're running the wrong route and the quarterback throws the ball to the sideline with nobody there. And it looks like he's inaccurate when really it's, you were supposed to cut out to the sideline. You cut in to the hash and that's a mistake. So this offense, what he talked about with me for the most part, was learning all of the complications of shifting the formation, getting guys in motion, understanding where they're going to start and where they're going to end the play, and how you get into these different sets to create these advantages for the offense. That's going to be the hard part, is nailing down that language and understanding how all of that flows together, so then guys can play fast. So to me, maybe there's less option routes, there's less progression drop back passing, and there's some more simplified things where the receiver hears something, they have a tag, they know they're running X route, whatever that route might be.
Yep. He pulled out the old Michael Scott. His biggest strength was his biggest weakness.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought that was interesting.
But honestly, it was funny to me. It was, or at least amusing, based on what I've read you write at times, right, about how one of his best characteristics last year was moving on to his second and third read and yeah, making those reads and making those plays, which are complicated. Those are hard plays to make for a college quarterback. But him saying that was actually a problem spot of his, in that he moved too quickly from his, his first read. Does that align with what your perception of his year was like last year?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's two parts to it. There is moving on from the progression too quickly and not letting it breathe. And I think that's part of it, where there were some plays that he predetermined it wasn't going to be there, and he moved on to the second read pretty quickly. But he even said there, even when I'm right, I need to let it breathe, essentially. Let the play develop, because it's all based on timing and rhythm. So, you know, you hit your back foot as a quarterback in the pocket, and that's supposed to align with your first progression. If it's open, you throw the football, and that is, you know, quick, rhythmic throwing. But if it's not there, then you're trained to take a hitch step and then go to your next progression, hitch step, next progression. And that's how, you know, Franklin talks about climbing the pocket, is hitch up and run. You can't hitch three or four times. And there were times where he was just getting to the second read too quickly because he knew what was there, but then the timing and the rhythm is off, and that creates some accuracy issues sometimes with quarterbacks and their feet and the timing of everything. So just kind of settling down, even if you know the answer to the test, I thought was a really interesting insight. And also, I think spoke to, he's aware of his weaknesses. He's aware. He's a very self-aware. Doesn't seem like he has like an ego about it. He wants to get better, so he's willing to do these things to improve, and is willing to admit where he needs to improve and not have that be some sort of problem for him to overcome, that he's not perfect. You know, I think that's important for guys that have incredible talent to be able to do that. Quickly though, we need to get to a couple things. We're going to get back to the Drew Aller conversation, but I need to make sure that we get to our sponsors for today's show. And I apologize for going from me to me in this nice long monologue. You're going to hear a lot of my voice here in just a second. But Nittany Cards Plus is an awesome new resource for Penn State fans, football fans, and people who love to collect cards. Nittany Cards Plus, in-state college of Center County's only dedicated sports trading card and collectible shop. If you're watching here on the YouTube channel, you can see the shop. I went and checked it out. Jason Dombach, a local person who's been in the community in State College for a really long time, he opened up this card shop this year, located at 1631 South Atherton Street, next to the PNC and across from the CVS. Nittany Cards has a huge selection of single cards, slabs, sealed hobby boxes. They have the high-end stuff. They have Topps, Bowman, Panini, Upper Deck. They also carry your favorite Penn State football players, rookie cards, Eagles, Steelers. They even have MMA stuff. They have the Bowman College Series, which is super popular. So if you are looking for a place to go and expand your card collection, or maybe to sell some, they actively buy and trade individual sealed trading cards, and they have the ability to keep all this stuff top notch for you. They've got they got sleeves, they've got books, however you want to present your cards. And of course, you can see here on the screen, they have memorabilia as well. So Nittany Cards Plus, 1631 South Atherton Street in State College, or give them a call, 814-954-7488. Also, today's show is sponsored by My Perfect Franchise. Andy Ludeke has been a sponsor of the show for quite a long time. If you have watched the show, you've heard me talk about Andy and My Perfect Franchise. Contact him at 404-973-9901. Nate, the number one way to the American dream is financial freedom. To manifest your own destiny, you need to have the resources to be able to do that. And if you have a life of expertise built in a certain company or certain sector, and you want to strike out on your own and manage your own company, he can help you with the different ways you can do that. It's not just all hands-on management. You can be an absentee owner, you can be a semi-absentee owner, or you can go all in with a brick and mortar. Whatever fits your abilities, whatever fits your skills, and whatever fits the current economy. He has his pulse on all of this because he does this himself. He's gone through all the ups and downs, and he's not just trying to sell you into a company. He's trying to find you the right one so that you succeed. So contact him at andy@myperfectfranchise.net or 404-973-9901. So what else did you find interesting about the conversation with Drew?
Yeah, I thought the conversation about last year, right? Because he touched on it in a couple different places, but specifically how close he felt like they were last year and how that led to frustration personally for him because they weren't as far off as I guess it looked. It's interesting. I just did a I just did a spring preview, right? I'm going through all the positions and kind of detailing where things stand for each position group going into the spring. And look, it's hard to put what he said up against the numbers and see where they meet, right? Like his perception is that they were close, right?
Yeah.
But you have this very stark contrast in performance and production. And here's the deal. Like I wrote that about him yesterday. I'm going to do it about the running backs today. And there's a reality here that the three performances of the losses versus the 10 wins are miles apart. they just thought, right? Yards per carry, miles apart. Passing yards per attempt, miles apart. They just were very, very different teams against better opponents. And I think that one of the struggles or one of the tough things to rectify for this team and for this offense is that so much of their success came against really inadequate opponents last season. Right. Like just being honest. It was not they did not perform at their best in the games that they needed to. And right. So where do they go from here? When he says, quote, for us offensively, we have the personnel to do whatever we want. Like, I don't doubt his belief in that. And I think in a lot of ways they do have that. But you've got to be able to translate those things from concept into reality that they haven't done so far last year.
I think it goes to you don't get credit for almosts, right? And I think that's what he's talking about is there's a lot of plays on film. If you rewind it back, this kind of folds into the conversation about Theo Johnson, I think, as well. And you know, after his combine performance, I think the number one takeaway isn't, wow, look how athletic Theo Johnson is. It's how dare you not have used him properly last year? Like, why wasn't this athletic freak used correctly? And I think it goes into, and there's a play I'm thinking of specifically. I forget which game it was. I want to say it was the Michigan game where Theo gets open up the seam and it's there for a touchdown in the red zone. But JB Nelson gives up a pressure. Drew has to sidestep. The window closes and suddenly they have to settle for a field goal in that situation when there was an open touchdown. So I think it's plays like that or just generally the cover zero play where Keandre Lambert Smith against Indiana gets open and then drops the ball down the field on a third down where that game doesn't have to be close if they convert that play. So there are times in you have to watch the, you know, not to sound like this way, but like you have to watch the film to see all the almosts of Mike Yurcich's offense got certain players open. Like the plays were there, you could say technically for them to win some of these games, but the overall efficiency of the offense, whether it was the quarterback not seeing it, pressure up the middle, receivers not getting open on critical downs, there was one thing or another on every play that prevented it from working, even though some of the core parts of it were there. There were players open or there were opportunities missed because one guy makes a mistake, and that's kind of the nature of offense. And Aller, you know, if he was guilty of anything last year, is that he couldn't fix all of that, and he couldn't elevate everybody to make those plays anyway.
Yeah. Speaking of elevate, you asked him at the end, right, about being elite and whether or not he thinks that he has those qualities, or can get to that point. You know, what did you think of his answer in basically hammering home the notion that the work will take him there?
Yeah. I wanted to give him the opportunity to kind of just state his truth about what he thinks of himself. You know, yeah. I think there's a lot of, you know, we have our conversations about what he can be and what he has the potential to be. But what does, and I actually pull this from you, you know, don't presume anything. What does he think? And yeah. So I thought the answer, he's a pretty mild-mannered guy, but he kind of bowed his back there at the end talking about putting in the maniacal amount of work to get to that point. And I think sometimes fans see his reactions on the field or caught on camera, and they think he's not tough enough for the position. And I don't think that that's the case. I think mentally he's got the ability to be great, but that, you know, he mentioned some of the things going back to one of his answers, talking about the pressure of the position. He said, nobody puts more pressure on me than I put on myself, even if that's not a good thing sometimes. So, you know, we've talked about this in big games, going back to those big games, there were opportunities, but early in games, he was a little bit, I think that was kind of an admission that he was a little bit too amped up for those games where he wanted it too badly and didn't play within himself. And I just see that kind of answer that he gave at the end is that he is going to do everything in his power to fix all of his mistakes. And we talked about him being self-aware and knowing where he can improve. And to me, that was I don't want to say there's a right answer there, but that was a great answer that he kind of, you could hear it in his voice that he was, there's a little bit of, I'm a little pissed off at the general thing going on around the conversation about me and what I can do. And I liked that. I liked that. Yeah. He had a little bit of resistance maybe in his voice.
Yeah. I think that, and look, this is just the nature of the job. You can't help but draw parallels to recent or even not recent experiences and players, and right. But the influence of Sean Clifford on Aller, I think, is unmistakable. And
yeah,
regardless of what the perception is outside of Sean Clifford, like Sean's deal, right? Like his thing was being a psycho in terms of his preparation. That was, I mean, it was almost legendary, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's how seriously he took the position. But you see in just what you just talked about, right? With Aller being too hyped up with no, it's almost like it's a burden having that much. Not that the preparation is a problem, but it just, it's a lot. It's a lot to carry. Yeah. And it puts so much of an expectation on yourself.
Yeah.
Well, what happens if Drew Aller can be a quarterback that knows all the answers, does all of that stuff, has seen everything, gets the experience like Sean Clifford had that unlocked Sean's potential at the end of his career, right? His last season was his best. For Clifford, what happens if you pair that and marry that with ability that Drew has, or I think we presume him to have in terms of his athleticism and his giftedness as a thrower, as a passer? What happens when you get that in the same passer, right? Like with Sean,
That's the whole game, right? That's been the million-dollar question since his freshman year when certain fans wanted him to take over. They didn't. I think the gamble there was sacrifice a 10-win season so that in 2023 you could go for a college football playoff berth because you wanted to accelerate that clock on Aller. And you know, I think that it's a great parallel you're making there between the two of them. The playmaking in the moment, you know, that's going to be the area that I think he talked about, like make plays within the structure of the offense. When it breaks down, try and make a play, try and make a smart play. Don't be stupid with the football, but be, that's where you need to be a playmaker. And then, you know, kind of operate the offense, because he talked about so much of his position is knowing what's about to happen before it happens. And yep. That's what the preparation is all about. Trying to understand, you know, in this particular formation at this part of the field, we know they like to do this. So I need to have all of that ready to go so that I can react quickly. And I think that's, to me, that's the good sign of he was ahead of schedule on those, on those plays last year where he's going through his progressions. He's like, he knows the information. The problem is like just getting it to come out of him. And I think that's where some fans have that hesitation of, at the quarterback position, certain guys are the guy, and they're the guy from the very beginning. And yep. And there's not a development curve. It's they come out of the box elite. And I think the understanding here has to be kind of based on what I saw from the offense and what I saw from other offenses. Drew didn't have a lot of the easy stuff that inflates your numbers and your confidence in a certain way, where yep. he's having last year. I talked about it. It's like, it's third and five. Go be great, Drew. And like, that's a hard position to be in consistently. And that was kind of the way the offense operated. I think this offense will open things up and be a little more unpredictable. I don't know where we were when we started, and I'm just going to stop talking now.
No, I think
this is what happens when I talk extemporaneously.
I've been thinking a lot about this lately. And not that this wasn't my position before, but I think it is magnified to me now that the disservice of talking about Drew and Singleton and Carter, right? In terms of you have a 3-year window with these guys total yeah. is like limitless. It only stood in the way to me, right? Like this notion that, okay, before Drew ever took a snap as a starting quarterback, it was, okay, you get 2023 and you get 2024 and that's it. Yep. He's off to the NFL, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that that was a fair timeline, just bluntly, right?
Yeah.
Singleton, maybe, right? It appears that he might still be on that trajectory. Abdul Carter, you would assume or presume maybe that he could be gone after this season, but there's, you know, that whole class, that 2022 class had so much hype to it that it was almost a given in a lot of people's minds and the way that they talk about it as though those guys would all be gone. And the reality is, this is such a stupid but blatant point to make, Drew Aller as a 21-year-old or 22-year-old is going to be a much better quarterback than he was as a 19-year-old this past season, right? If that opportunity arises, if he has the chance to be that guy and to have a couple more years at Penn State, doors will open for him, right?
Yeah.
Performance will improve. All of those things come with that time that I'm not sure he was ever afforded in terms of the public conversation about what his career would be at Penn State.
So this gets into the subconscious of the presumptions around recruiting five stars and generally the dudes in football. So, you know, you want to go to the NFL as a junior because that means you're one of the elite players. The young, like guys that are drafted in the first round typically aren't 5-year players. They are young players who have stood out above their peers during their 3 seasons or however many seasons they're on the field, right? So they're obviously ahead of the development curve from a physical and mental standpoint. And if you're not a junior, then there's got to be a reason you didn't come out early, because if you're a dude, you're a dude. And so there's this pressure for all of these guys to be Saquon Barkley, because the evidence shows if you're not, then you're never going to be. And that's, you know, that doesn't allow for players like Jahan Dotson to exist, but that's kind of everyone's the main character in their own story. So they all think that they're going to be that guy. And that's the struggle. James Franklin talks about this with this conversation all the time. And because all these guys were labeled 5 stars and Drew Aller was this, you know, the messiah figure for the quarterback position never goes away. So the pressure is he has to be the guy, and the guy is always great out of the box. And I think that goes into the conversation that we had is, you know, that doesn't always have to be the case.
it will be interesting to see how this year goes. And even with success, how that shapes perceptions of him.
Yep.
Right. Coming yep. off of the season. I'm fascinated to see what right. The number of guys that go early, the number that really have a good standing to go early. Mm-hmm. I think has in my mind been reduced right after last season. You know, but that doesn't mean that they can't have a great year this season. Right. And translate that and parlay that into ahead of schedule at this point, NFL careers.
Yeah. And I think you can see guys that are unwilling to deviate from the plan, you know, the plan of I'm going to play for 3 years and go to the league because, you know, that's who I am. And, you know, this offseason, we've seen some of that hasn't really worked out for certain players. But Nate,
thing, because you follow the NFL so much more closely than I do. Like, yeah. When you talk about dudes, right, that came out after 3 years, like who are they in realistic terms, right? You're talking about 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Are there five? Are there six? Like, right? Like, I mean, how many of those guys fit?
I'd have to think about that. I would have to think about that.
Your guy, Josh Allen, was a four-year guy, wasn't he?
Was he? Oh, well, he had a JUCO year, so I think he was a junior. I don't know. That's a great question. I'm going to have to think about that because that's a fair point. Joe Burrow was a four-year player, right?
I believe so.
Patrick Mahomes. I don't know. I would just be throwing darts into the wind. I don't want to necessarily do that, but you make a great point. I guess it's more, I would say it's maybe less about the quarterback because that's a fair point. But the skill position players, you know, guys whose athleticism is the foundation of the position, running back, defensive end, corner, those guys, like if they're not, if you're not an elite athlete and you're not producing like that, the NFL might, you know, it might never be that for you. So it's a complicated conversation. We got a huge mailbag to get to, Nate. Okay. I don't think we're going to get to all of it.
I'm done.
But I did. I promised this early in the show. And I want to give this to you. So this is something I've been wanting to do for a long time because there is a large and robust community of people on YouTube who don't get to the live show and they live their thoughts and opinions on our videos. And I wanted to bring those thoughts and opinions to life through some artistic license. So I present to you YouTube Comment Theater.
Hoping that Drew keeps it on some read options this year. The defense crashed on the RB almost every time last year, yet we still handed it off. Drew has the ability to consistently run it when they crash. The 109 WR in his class. I guess this is what PSU is now. Until PSU gets a top 20 WR, we're going to be in the garbage can that is literally the only position holding us back from competing with OSU. If you look back at the times we either beat or almost beat OSU, we had a deep threat downfield. Unless Fleming can fit into that role, which if I think he could, OSU would have been playing him earlier. I'm losing my interest in PSU because of what we have turned into. Franklin is not the answer, and we have gone all in on him. We are not a TCU. We should not need to develop 3-star players into 4 or 5 stars. We should be able to recruit the best of the best, and as the schedule gets harder, we're going to see us falling into the second tier of the Big Ten. Making the playoff once every 5 years and getting destroyed in the first round.
24 class won't cut it. Oh wait, didn't we have a top 10 class? See where that got us. #beat Maryland. LOL.
They will never ever win a championship under the inept head coach.
And the lazy of this channel not to use more video clips. For real.
You guys are typical Kool-Aid drinkers. The point is Franklin sucks as a coach. He's been there a long time and beat cream puffs with good players, and same will happen this year. I guess you guys are okay beating cream puffs and saying you're good. He can recruit, no doubt, but that's it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
YouTube comment theater. Hopefully you enjoyed that as much as I do. There are certain times I just like, it makes me laugh, so we're doing it, Nate.
Yeah, you know, it's always a complicated line to balance of, right? College athletics, any athletics, right, is not anything without passion of fans, right? They want to be... they want to be passionate, and you know, sometimes that that leads to some unreasonableness. I would say is a major feature there. But right, I think we try to we try to be reasonable, and we try to see things as even-handedly as we can. But maybe it takes that passion from everyone to get over the top. I don't know. You know?
I'm not trying to be diplomatic. We're having some fun with this one. Hopefully no one's offended. But if you are, sound off in the comments, and who knows what'll happen with those thoughts. I mean, Nate, it's a win-win. Either I get more content for this or people stop being so angry, and we'll see. I think it's good. I think it's going to be something very, like, I'm excited for the future of this.
I like the mispronunciation of the computerized speech. That's
this. That was my favorite part. So hopefully we'll get your thoughts about what you think of YouTube comment theater in the future. But let's get to some of the questions here in the chat and from BlueWhiteIllustrated.com in the mailbag. So the first question is a comment here from Papa Smurfy. Says, T Frank, bro, let it go. Shave your head, dude. What do you think I did? Like, this is, we haven't addressed this publicly here on the show. Yeah, I know I'm balding. That's what this haircut is for. Like, I
think he's saying
that this was enough.
Yeah, but he wants the full close crop. I mean, you've got a shadow there. Like, go the full Franklin and just have it skin, right? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, this is the interesting thing. Anyone's opinion on my appearance, anyway, whatever. But you know, I never wanted to be the guy trying too hard to keep his hair. Like, if my life went where I had Nate's complexion and his hair, I'd be happy with that. But I never want, like, my like your thick full head of hair with a hairline that hasn't moved since you were 20, I bet. My grandpa had this haircut his whole life. And so I never wanted to be the dude that was like combing over or filling in the gaps. And it's just like, I thought this was me being the adult and admitting, okay, the game is up.
Yeah.
But apparently I need to go, like, we have extremes. It's just shaved is the answer. I thought it was pulling off like early stage Jason Statham, you know, where Jason Statham was obviously balding, but was like, he had it close and tight. All right. We'll have to see.
It's not going to take long for it to grow back to this current level if you shave it all the way.
That's a fair point. So let's get to the actual question.
Yep.
Fij or THIJ on the message board asks, early bets on third running back, second tight end, fourth safety for spring practice, which is starting next week. Nate, do you have some thoughts on those three positions?
Yes. You know, I think that Quentin Martin is going to make things interesting for third running back. I'll just be honest there. So I don't know that I'm ready to bet that, but
okay.
Montgomery, you know, those two guys have
their work. Cam Wallace.
Cam Wallace, they have their work cut out for them, I would say. Just because Cam, right, is a little undersized, but I think has put on some weight, if
yeah,
I recall that correctly.
He's 5'9", 200 at this point. Yeah, I mean, when we saw him the other day, and by the other day, I mean about a month ago, he looked great. You know, He is very well filled out. I think he's got, and I'm glad you bring that up because I think Cam Wallace has the opportunity to make this a competition, you know, like I don't think it's going to be there. There's this feeling that Quentin Martin's just going to walk in and be the third running back. And, you know, both those guys from last year are talented. They are undersized, but they have talent.
Yeah. And I mean, there has been some buzz for Quentin Martin in his first couple of months on campus. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that will be interesting. Tight end, I am fully on board with Khalil Dinkins as number two. I get it. The you know, the rap stuff makes sense. And I think Schlaffer has turned a corner a little bit. You know, still has some work to do. But Dinkins, to me, I think has already demonstrated his worthiness. You know, is he as well-rounded as Tyler Warren was to Theo? I'm not sure, right? I'm not sure that it's quite to that level yet, but yeah, I would bet on him. And fourth safety, not sure.
That one's a bit of a mystery, right? Because I think both of the King Mack and Dakari Nelson have unique but different skill sets that might fit differently in the defense.
Yeah, and I think, right, I mean, that's the question, is King Mack even a true safety this year, right? Is that...
Well, that's a great question. This one from Master Joker saying, with it being said that King Mack is looking like he's staying at safety, who do you think will be competing for the nickel role? I think it's a great question. So I don't think there was ever really a strong question about whether King Mack was a corner or not. It's, Nate, is he more Lamont Wade? Or is he more a pure safety where he can play that nickel role and still be a safety? I think that there's a middle ground here where it's not binary. He's not, he has to be a corner or he has to be a safety. You can, if he's the best guy for that nickel role, he can be that guy. But whoever it is, you know, I think it can be position agnostic. It has been previously for Penn State.
Yeah. Nothing to add.
This one, and I'm just coming down the list. So this one from Psych Him, deny Dennis Sutton. That's all, folks. Deny Dennis Sutton is up to 6'5", 270. Do you think he can handle this weight gain well and even play, even further step up his play? Nate, 270-pound defensive end, something that Penn State hasn't had very frequently. What do you think of Psych Him's question?
What's a mean at? A mean's a... He's got to be 260, isn't he?
Somewhere in there. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess the conversation with Deny has always been that he's not a physical freak, right? Is that accurate?
If we only consider speed, you know, top end speed, then yeah. He isn't the same freak as a Chop Robinson, but, you know, being 6'5", 270 and moving the way he does also is, you know, kind of being a freak. He's built differently than the standard Penn State defensive end, which have been speed rushers to the outside. He is a power rusher for sure.
Yeah. So I'll balls in your court on that one. You give the answer there.
So I think the number one thing is that this is a weight gaining portion of the year. So this is, you know, lifters call this bulking season, where you're trying to put on mass, you're trying to put on muscle. Penn State likes it to be lean mass 100%, but there is that certain, like, you have to eat more to gain weight, to have the energy in your body to grow bigger muscles. So it's not always 100%. They're gaining 100% lean mass. Yep. So when you get into a cutting phase and you're doing more agility and explosiveness work and you're running more, I think he's going to be 265 by the season. Like there's some margin here for him to be 265, 268, and still be as fit as possible.
Yeah. I don't get hung up on 5 pounds.
No, especially on a dude who's as big as Deny.
Yeah.
This one here from G Martinez 42695. How do you think the recent rule changes, meaning helmet communication, 2-minute warning, will affect Penn State football and head coach James Franklin? Nate, do you think that Franklin is in favor of these rules, and will Penn State be able to take advantage of them in some unique way where it's better for them than maybe another school?
I don't know about better for them, but I would bet my house on them studying and involving analytics people and right every stone turned
right.
to see what the possible exploitation is of both of those factors, right? I mean, certainly for the communication, that you know, look, we're this is in direct response, right, to Michigan's
yeah,
situation, right, last year and the 2 years prior to that. You know, and the 2-minute warning, like, I don't know.
That's a commercial. Like,
yeah,
the 2-minute warning is designed to add more commercials.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it affects, I don't know. I haven't looked that far into, what the components are of that.
It's a free timeout. So that's going to be just timeout management, and clock management does change with a 2-minute warning if you have that extra opportunity for a stoppage in the clock, especially with a running clock now where it doesn't stop on every first down. So I think it's just managing and understanding when to take your timeouts to maximize the time you have left. If you're down, how your opponent is going to react when you're up. I think you're right. Studying best practices, talking to NFL contacts and how they handle those things, I think is the main thing about the 2-minute warning. And then I'm curious to see how this affects quarterbacks. Like, linebackers is one thing, and the defense is one thing, but I don't know when the communication is going to be cut off, but if the coordinator can help the quarterback, you might see young quarterbacks able to do a little bit more if they're given that little kind of boost of, hey, let's check out, you know, here's what they're doing, here's what we see, and give some communication before the snap. I think that could be something that some quarterbacks take advantage of.
I think that for whatever reason, it's eluded me all these years, but isn't one of the, like, people have complaints about Franklin's timeout usage. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Like, have you seen that?
Clock management, timeout usage. I don't but study those things because I'm studying the plays. So I leave that to the experts in the stands.
I mean, in my recollection, they're always, when they're used without, you know, in certain end game situation, whatever those situations are, right? 2-minute drill at the end of a half, what have you? They're almost always used because the play clock is expiring, and he is choosing to get them into the right play as opposed to taking a delay of game and or, you know, whatever defense you're in, and it's not the right defense. You can't switch it to get into the call that you want.
Avoiding a disaster more so than using them strategically. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. But I don't understand the objection to that. I don't understand. Like, right, you have analytics, you have things that say, hey, you are statistically this much less likely to get a first down if you put yourself in first and 15, right? Like, it is overwhelming that the drive will end prematurely. You are taking away your opportunity to have the ball in your hands, which is pretty key to winning.
Here's another question for you. This one comes from Coasty 2127. If the organization got wind that revenue sharing was coming sooner rather than later, would Happy Valley United try to pull in donations to make sure Penn State is more competitive till it's in-house? Meaning, I believe, I'm not sure which one he's talking referred to as in-house. NIL in-house? Recruiting?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think of this question from Coasty?
Yeah, I mean, they're not gonna stop, right? Like, they're not gonna stop pursuing donations and support for the program. I mean, I'm not even sure that it'll stop after, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say this. The one does not preclude the other. Revenue sharing doesn't mean NIL goes away, right?
Yeah, no, and I'm not exactly sure what shape that will take moving forward. But I do think, and when I say I think, I know it, like, the entire relationship right now is, and I'm not speaking specifically about Penn State, I'm saying in college athletics, there is no athletic administrator that is happy or coach with the notion that their primary compensation mechanism has to be handled outside of their purview. Like, that does not make sense in college athletics, that you are assigning that response. And it's the law, right? It's the way that these things were structured for the NCAA to maintain its legitimacy and keep up this appearance of amateur athletics. Right. Like, all of that is understood, but nobody likes it. Nobody thinks that's a good idea. It complicates all kinds of things that don't really need to be complicated. And so if you could support the Nittany Lion Club, right? If you could just support Penn State athletics, and part of that support is siphoned off into compensating players, like, that's what's going, that's what they're all going to choose, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're all going to choose that over, hey, you know, there's a 15, 20%, whatever it is, that comes off the top for these organizations, for these collectives. And I mean, a lot of them are doing it, you know, as bare bones as they possibly can. They're trying not to take off these administrative fees, but you're still cutting into what the revenue could potentially be, what the streamliningness, right. That's not a word, but you're not able to streamline it the way that you would within the organization of Penn State Athletics. And so ultimately, yeah, Happy Valley United is going to continue to take donations as long as it is feasible for them to do that. But I do think very blatantly and bluntly, it will be the preferred model of every athletic department across the country to handle this stuff in-house.
Right. And that door is now open.
It is.
This is another one for you, Nate. Scott L. asks, what are the chances that they can do the West Side demo and construction on Beaver Stadium in the time that no season ticket holders on the West Side end up having to miss some games? What's your thought or your insight into how the renovations are going to go for Penn State on Beaver Stadium?
What are the chances? I just think that everyone is going to have to come to grips with some realities that there's going to be displacement. Bottom line, like, when you do a project of that scale, that capacity, it's going to happen. And look, like, just being real, it's going to happen to the East Side too. Right? Like, so everybody on the West Side that this is happening to first, and certainly it's not remotely close to the point where that is actually happening, right? This season, it will not be impacted, I don't believe, by anything, right? There aren't going to be any changes there. I mean, this is like four more years down the line before you really see those, but I think that they'll figure it out. I mean, there's going to be stuff that they do to make that work. But you like, yeah, there's going to be less seats, and people who have had season tickets in a certain section for a while aren't necessarily going to have access to those seats without certainly price increases, right? Like, I mean, I'm not here to do Pat Kraft's dirty work, but like, costs are going to go up.
Yeah.
Costs are going to go up. Like, ticket prices are going to go up. Seat licensing is going to go up. There's going to be fewer seats there, right? I think that they'll be able to keep it to 100,000. I mean, I know that's a point of pride, and that's a thing that Penn State wants to be able to do, but ultimately, like, this is a blunt reality here. This is where this is going. This is where this is headed for Penn State.
Here's another question regarding the team. Poncho 570 says, riddle me this, Batman. And I was doing my Joker impersonations before the show. They were all terrible, so I didn't want to subject you to them. True or false? Smith Vilbert is the biggest enigma on the team this year. I want to say false, Nate, but I don't have a better answer. I didn't take enough time to really think about it. Do you have one off the top of your head that would be a bigger enigma than Smith Vilbert?
Sure. Zachy Wheatley.
Okay. Why?
Who's he going to be? Who's he going to be? Right. Like that. I mean, certainly you saw some indicators, through his two seasons really of playing the position of good and bad. right?
Yeah.
Last season, just that didn't really, it didn't hit, right? He didn't have the opportunity to impact games the way that I think people thought he would.
Yeah.
Right. How does that change? Right. Chuck Losey singled him out on last Thursday, right, about being a guy who's like changed. I mean, I'm interested in a lot of, like, Smith Vilbert is for sure a big unknown for next year.
Yeah.
But I think that there's quite a few of those. And like, to me, defensive end isn't necessarily a position that gives me pause.
Right.
Given what else they have there that is proven. Whereas at safety, I do think that there's, you know, I'm not saying there's a ton of question, right? Like,
right.
Jay Reed and Winston are kind of your obvious guys there, but I do think that there's maybe more of an opportunity there to contribute for Verzecchi.
Yeah.
No, Nolan Rucci, like that. I mean,
yeah.
Like, so
biggest
Drew Shelton, work, Donka. Right? Yeah.
Those are guys. And I think that the point here is he's been around for so long and we know very little about him because of the injuries and kind of his timeline. So I don't dismiss the idea. It's just as you pointed out, the biggest meaning most important, biggest meaning biggest mystery, because he wouldn't figure into the top four in most people's, you know, too deep. Could he is but a question. Could.
Sure.
Yeah. The receivers, class of 2022, if you just lump them all together as the biggest enigma, you know, this was a group of guys that had talents, individual unique abilities, but none of them had the early access skills. You know, Caden Saunders, we all thought he would be that guy, and it didn't happen. So, like, this group of five, you know, Tyler Johnson is really athletic. We have seen nothing of him for, you know, the first 2.5 years he's been on campus. And so, like, I would put that class of 22 as a whole as an enigma, because that what is their impact on the roster?
Yeah.
You know, what is their impact on the receiver competition this spring? Are they going to push any of these guys? So, you know, I'm cheating and I'm doing four or five players all at once, but, you know, that'd be what I would go with.
It's a good question, because I do, in the sense that, have people forgotten about Smith Vilbert existing and being on the roster? Yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't, because he's a guy who I do think will factor in some capacity. It's just a matter of, like, keeping it in context of, hey, if the perception is he doesn't exist and he can fill in as the fifth and be a reliable depth piece, right? Or fourth, right, work himself into the rotation for sure. I mean, that's a major win for him. That's a major win for the program at a position that does have certainly some uncertainty. I mean, all over the place, right? It's just a matter of, like, you know, Deny for sure. You think Abdul for sure. You think Jameel Lyons for sure. You think Zariah Fisher. You think Amin Vano. Like, they're, that should be a spicy room this spring.
Yeah. So here's a question for you that I find interesting. RD24. This is a long one, right? So let me summarize. Special teams question: after seeing Daquan Hardy do a great job punt returning last year, does it make you think James Franklin is rethinking your punt return strategy? If you're James Franklin, do you give a guy with burner chance to go back there and make plays with the risk of dropping some punts? Or do you sacrifice big plays, go with the reliable hands, which we've seen him do more often? You know, it's been fairly well. I know we've done fairly well with punt returns before, but in the short stint, Hardy was electric. And if the offense sputters, they could use a big return play. So do you think Hardy changes the appetite for risk at that position?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't know. Do you? I think that certainly it would not be a question to anyone in that building that the prioritization of catching the ball, maintaining possession, it dwarfs everything. It is priority number one to not have muff punts, you name it, at that spot, because you're giving up a possession. You know, I think that they thought that Caden did that until he didn't. You know, and then obviously they moved to Daquan, but I don't see there being that much of an appetite until things got to that point.
Yeah. Let's also have an honest conversation about Daquan Hardy, the punt returner. I just did the quick math on screen. So if I was doing the furrowed brow thing and you saw that, it's because I was thinking hard about math, which is not fun for anyone to see. But 53% of his return yards last year came against UMass. You know, the two touchdowns, 129 yards against UMass. And that's great. Like, it sparked them to a blowout victory, a feel good in the rain. So it didn't feel like a slog. And I think even after that game, you kind of pointed out, like, you know, the offense wasn't electric in that game. They had all this extra help, but against Ole Miss, fair caught too. 7 for 77 against Michigan State, who everyone thinks was terrible. So, you know, a lot of his production came against not good teams. And, you know, against Michigan, he had 2 returns for 5 yards. Kind of the NFL conversation. Is it going to help him get drafted? Sure. Like, anything you can do to help is great. Yep. But the role of special teams from a return aspect, kick and punt, has been severely diminished. Like, how many plays is there just a hold? Like, just any standard punt play, there's always a hold. So, I probably devalue special teams and contributions like this a little too much. But at the same time, like, if again, the whole thing, I think, is you look at the analysis, what is everyone looking for? They're looking for 10 yards. They're not necessarily looking for home runs. They're looking for catch football, get us an extra first down. It's not necessarily going for broke at that position. Do you want to do one more or do you want to call it a day?
Let's do one more.
Okay. You can take your pick here. We can do best recruiter and developer, Tyler Elsden, combine. You might have been, you probably wanted to say, let's not do another one.
And now, that's a great show. Thank you all.
I think even you and I can answer this question about the scouting combine. Blackheart asks, seems like Chuck Losey strikes again, talking about the combine. Unfortunate for Kalen King and Olufashinu being injured. Seems like Penn State balled out at the combine and showcased their athleticism. Is this something that can be used on the recruiting trail, or is NIL still outweighing this? Nate, NIL is still outweighing this?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's still good for Penn State. I mean, look, like, this is an established track record. It is demonstrable that Penn State produces really athletic guys that test out very, very well in these situations. And guess what? You just saw it with Singleton's 5x570 squat, right?
That was, like, nuts.
There's more coming. It's not ending, with Theo's 4.5, right? I mean, there's a bunch of athleticism, and certainly Losey in the vein of Dwight Gault, it's just continuing that. They stress it, they practice it, they like, this stuff isn't an accident, right? They work on this stuff. They try to get these guys in a position to be as prepared as they possibly can. I mean, it's the bedrock of the program, right? Get them as prepared as they possibly can for the next level. And you see that in that testing.
And this is also, I think, something that's important. Not that, so every team does this. I'm not going to say that Penn State is unique or special, but they're a very data-driven recruiting team. So they do a filtration of this stuff in the recruiting process. Do you have long enough arms?
Yep.
Do you have the right frame? Do you have the right 40 time? Do you have the right earmarkers of a guy that's going to turn into a dude? So it's not, Chuck Losey does an awesome job of helping these guys fulfill that talent, but the coaching staff, they're really good at identifying athletic talent. You know, it's pretty clear, even by the guys they don't get, that go on to be very successful recruits and then go on to be very successful players at other programs. Penn State is routinely in on these guys. They identify them before a lot of other programs and give them an offer. So it is, there's a little bit of selection bias of, you know, Penn State is killing it at the combine because they're killing it in recruiting, and then they're killing it in development. So it's kind of a whole, and it's got a cool factor, right, Nate? Like, every little thing where you can be cool and you can be one of the cool guys at the combine of Penn State players come and deal, that's going to make you think I can go be that if I'm a recruit. But it's not the number one thing. Like, you know, it's not going to be why they get 5 stars, right?
Oh, you're going to pay me and I get to do this. Yes, for sure. I'm in.
Last question here from the chat. David Greeter, he says, buffalo chicken dip or chili con queso dip? Ooh, that's tough. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm going to go with chili con queso. Nate, do you have a preference?
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm anti-dip.
Oh, what?
I'm out.
Good thing this was the last question. Although we're out here on a sour note. You're anti-dip.
I like salsa. Salsa's good, I guess, but it just feels like a lot of work to me personally.
Okay. And he brings this up later.
Sorry, Dave.
Bane Train says, spinach and artichoke guy. I made an awesome spinach and artichoke dip. That was super dope. We stuffed it and then baked it in peppers. I know it sounds healthy, but that was really good.
Trader Joe's has a spinach artichoke that it's just like a block of frozen spinach artichoke dip and you melt it. It's good. It's good. But you're not putting effort into
dips is what you're saying. You'd rather have entrees and things like that.
I'm an entree guy. Look at me.
I don't blame you.
Very clearly. And desserts.
Well, we're out of here on that one. That's the BWI Live Show. I'm Thomas Frank Hard. This is actually the last live show of the week. I'm having some work done to my house, and they said, hey, you might not have power intermittently on Thursday. And I was like, great, I guess we're not doing a show then. So that's what I'll be doing. But we have the KSN show coming up tomorrow. We'll have more great stuff for you here on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel. And Nate, next week is spring ball. So we've got James Franklin. We've got practice highlights on the way. It is time for some football, Nate.
I'm in. I can't wait.
All right. Let's get out of here and we'll be back to talk about it.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.